Hello and welcome to the Hope Rehab Mindful Compassion Show. My name is Paul Garrigan. I'm a mindful coach here at Hope.
My name is Matthew Richardson. I'm volunteer and personal trainer at Hope.
Jordan Leaf, support worker at Hope.
Graham McGeeke, support worker at Hope and fitness motivator.
Okay, so today what we want to talk about is how we develop the motivation to sort of quit addiction. So let's start with Grant. How did you get motivated to come here?
For me, it was basically how I let my family down and how bad I felt about myself. Basically, I just couldn't really go on. I was depressed for a long time and didn't really see a way out. A lot of it was Hope. Basically, had everything I needed. Everything that I wanted to rehab that I couldn't find in Australia.
Did you try to quit before?
Yeah, I did. Tried to quit many times, but I was doing it for my family and not for myself. When I first came to Hope, I was completely broken. I'd surrendered, tried everything, and nothing worked. And this is my last shot, and had everything that I wanted, so I threw it all at it.
Jordan?
Yeah, for me, similar to Grant, I was at rock bottom, had sort of hit the bottom of the hole and just really didn't know how to get out. A lot of my family had started to get concerned, so that was a big motivator for me, just showing that, you know, I was affecting people other than myself, which upset me quite a bit and made me realise that a lot of the hidden behaviours that I thought I had really weren't that well hidden. And I knew I needed something that was going to not just stop me drinking, but more importantly, kind of fix the way that I was feeling. I'd sort of lost, or was spiritually bankrupt, I would say, and just really didn't feel any compassion for anyone or any of that love and excitement that I used to have for life. That was sort of gone and being replaced with just a general selfishness.
What do you think, Matthew?
For me, I started losing interest in my hobbies. My sport is the love of Australian football. My gym, my boxing is the love of it all. And just kind of fell out of it. And my family could see that I was falling apart away from it. And they put me on antidepressant because I was hiding the fact that I was using drugs. And then I got to the point where I was losing everything, cars, motorbikes, everything I ever had, everything I worked hard for, job. And then I asked for help. And my auntie very, very kindly showed me this place and she brought me here. And yeah, I was very lucky to have a good support behind me. My auntie and uncle, sorry. And they're both, yeah, really, really, really supportive to me. And got me through here. And this place is, I had a lot of issues, not only with the drugs, but I found that the drugs were stopping me feeling other things that happened in my childhood. And, you know, I've dealt with things in my childhood, still dealing with them, and, yeah, happy to this day.
But the thing, I was just thinking when you guys were saying it, I mean, this sort of horrible stuff happens to lots of people, and they just keep on going down, down, down. It's like they don't stop. Why do you think it is that, you know, some of us sort of eventually have enough and others don't? Like, why do we develop this motivation when other people don't?
Well, I think other people don't. Well, especially other people in terms of if they're not addicts, they don't actually reach a rock bottom and never gets that bad. But we don't have an ability after a while to actually deal with the trauma, and it becomes like a trap. You end up falling into it and you just have no way of getting out. And for me, I was lost. I had nowhere to go, desperate. And that's what brought me here.
And I suppose you must have had, you know, the idea that there's something better.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just always drew on when I was a kid. I didn't have a worry in the world and I got excited about things, as Jordan was saying earlier. And I just lost that motivation or any hope for my future. But I knew it was there, but I just didn't know how to get it.
So what do you think, Joe? Why do some people sort of And you can sort of hear people that have horrific things happen to them and they still keep on using drugs and alcohol. So why is it that we developed the motivation when they didn't? What do you think? I mean, you can't have to give a real answer, but what do you think?
Similar to Grant, I think in that sense of if you've had a lovely childhood and then at some point it seems to all get lost, you definitely have a marker of what was normal. I think some people that, you know, experience have traumatic lives from a very young age perhaps have never had that normal to go back to. So they kind of never realise that there is a problem because it's always felt like this. I think it's families as well, your support structures. If you've got people that care about you and push you to do this, it's obviously a much greater motivator. Some people, for whatever reason, have got to a point where they don't have that in their lives, so there's no one to pick them up. And then others have just gone past the point of redemption in some ways and won't really ever look at changing their behaviours. I have a lot of self-awareness, so I knew what I was doing, and it was just more a how do I stop it as opposed to anything special that other people don't have in terms of being able to motivate myself. It's more just I just needed a solution, and I found one through here.
For me, I had a trauma, very big trauma happen when I was 7, 8, 9, and I remember being a kid back then, before it all happened, vaguely. I just remember I did a lot of work on being a child, and I remember this little happy boy. And then before I got here, I was just like 17 years, 18 years, I just held it in. At a very young age, I started drinking. And we got rid of the feelings. And I got into drugs and just kept the feelings away. I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired, which was the end result. And it just gave me, because I was always into my sport and my fitness, always had to be the best. It was just never going to work for me. But yeah, I was just, the motivation I got was, I am better than this. I can do this.
And did you sort of sense that all the time, or was it sort of you eventually sort of said, I can do better than this? Or was that always in the back of your mind?
Every day. Some days I was too scared to even go to my work van, to go to work. Mm. And that was, I can do this. And then just motivating. And then I asked for help, and I was very lucky, as I said, with a very good support family behind me.
One of the things we sort of say here is that, you know, like the usual idea, so fear-based reasons can sort of get us to stop, but maybe they won't keep us, like, stop long-term. Like, so we sort of say, oh, you know, I don't want to lose my family, I don't want to get sick, I don't want to. But if that's our only reason, this is my experience, you know, like I'd have those reasons for quitting. But eventually there will come a day when those reasons didn't even matter anymore. Like maybe I'm sober and I fall out with my family anyway. It's like, you know, if those fear-based reasons might never be enough, I might even care about dying anymore. If my life isn't very satisfying, what do I care about dying? So what do you think that, you know, okay, those reasons that got us here might not be enough to sort of keep us motivated long term?
Well, two things happened for me. One, my mum said to me that if I keep going the way I am, she's worried she's going to get sick, get cancer, which is riddled through our family. So that was really hit me hard. She'd been awake sleepless nights basically for a year and a half, and she'd had enough, and she was getting sick, but not, you know, terminally sick. But the second thing for me, for myself, and I say this to myself every day, like, how do I want to be remembered? Throughout my sort of teen years, I was successful, always moved up the corporate ladder, but it got to a point where I just had no self-confidence and didn't believe in myself. And I knew that wasn't me, so I needed to find me again, and that was just something I had to tell myself every day, because before I came to Hope, I was remembered as a guy that struggled and he's an alcoholic, and that's not how I wanted to be remembered, because I knew I had a lot more to give.
And that's exactly like what we're trying to do. So we sort of say in this program, like in the Mindful program, that it's about becoming who we really are, because that's the only person that we can be happy being. And we get sort of lost along the way, but that, and we really feel it being lost. We know that we're lost, We sort of, even before we start drinking, we can start to feel really, really uncomfortable in our own skin. And that's usually because we're not in our own skin, like we're sort of pretending to be something we're not, because we feel we have to hide our feelings, we have to, you know, do all of this stuff to protect ourselves. And it's all of that stuff that makes us feel so disconnected. What do you think about it, Jordan?
Yeah, I would say fear for me was what was keeping me in addiction as opposed to what brought me here. I probably didn't realize how much fear I had in all parts of my life. Certainly, you know, fear of financial security, fear of rejection, fear of, yeah, just so many fears across the board that I was drinking to kind of suppress. A lot of that was fear of having lost myself, fear of would I ever be able to find myself again. And I think that's, well, getting over those fears has been sort of one of the biggest helps for me and put me sort of where I suppose I am right now, is just facing those fears and realizing that there is another way.
Would you agree, Matthew?
Yeah, I just really, really, really connected to what you said about the finding yourself in the mindfulness program, which has helped me a lot. When I left, I wrote a note to my mum saying, I don't know who the Matthew Richardson is, but I'm going to go find him. I need to go find him, and I don't know where I'm going to find him. I'm going to go try. And it's, yeah, definitely this mindfulness has definitely brought me to the fact where I know who Matthew Richardson is, and I'm happy being Matthew Richardson in my own skin. It's amazing.
Because it is really that sense, isn't it, that we're just not ourselves, or we're not. And it's very unsatisfying, isn't it?
Yeah, like when I was younger, I never really had made decisions. I never even what I wanted to do for a career, everything got made for me. And now I'm making decisions for myself. And it's weird, it's really strange, but it's such an achievement. Like my achievement at the moment is I'm a personal trainer now here, and it's something I've always wanted to do, and I've always been told not to do it because you're not going to make money from everybody else. But now I'm doing it because I love it, and that's who Matthew Richardson is. He loves his fitness, and he loves to help people with fitness. It's good.
Yeah. So it's interesting something you said earlier. You were saying, like, that you were sort of lucky enough. I think you and Jordan both said it. You were lucky enough that earlier on that you had sort of this, you had a time when you felt good.
Yeah.
And you were sort of thinking, well, maybe that's why some people, like, don't recover, because they don't know that exists.
Mm.
Just go into that a bit deeper.
Yeah, I just remember being a kid and just not having to worry the world. I remember getting excited about stuff. I remember smelling the grass when it's freshly cut. All those little things that made you not have a care in the world. And then slowly as I got older and stress became overwhelming to me, I lost that ability to feel excited, feel motivated, be happy, really. But I knew I was always going to beat addiction because I just would never give up. But drawing off early childhood was something that kept me going, because I still remember those really exciting times in Christmas. I still remembered family holidays where I just couldn't sleep, or getting up to play soccer, that really nervous butterfly, amazing feelings that you get when you don't have all this crap that we build up in our head. So, yeah, for me, it was just remembering those times and looking at other people. Like, you can see when people are happy, and I just wasn't that.
But what about people that, you know, that they had a really bad childhood? And they just don't have those memories. I mean, and they do see people like that recovering. I mean, I wonder how they do it. Because it's like, I can relate to what you're saying, but like my childhood was far from ideal. There were definitely sort of good moments in it. So people who didn't have that, because some people are just traumatized from the beginning, like how, because we know they do get out of it. But I wonder how they do. Where do they get their motivation from?
Yeah, I mean, you do see it a little bit here in just that level of moderation. People that haven't really ever been comfortable in their skin, when they find it, they almost swing all the way to the extreme of, it's almost a buzz and a high in its own right to suddenly feel comfortable in yourself. I think people that come in that have had it already but lost it somewhere along the way tend to settle into it a little bit more comfortably, you know, this, you can sort of see it in people's behaviour when, yeah, when they get it and they realise that they can be comfortable. You know, it is a wonderful thing. For me, it was remembering back to where I was comfortable and realise, you know, that I was at one point somewhere along the way I lost it. Now I've kind of got it back, hopefully. And through, you know, continuing with the work and the steps and the mindfulness and meditation, I will hold on to it and hopefully won't lose it again. Then there's some people that, you know, definitely believe they don't ever deserve it. They don't deserve to find that happiness. And it's really hard to watch some of those people that, you know, struggling against themselves because they don't feel worthy of happiness and they've never had it, so they don't know what they're really going for. But they can get it as long as they do the work.
So what would you sort of say then, Matthew, that people who didn't have that taste of something, of a better life as kids, say, that they have to sort of take more of a leap of faith when they come here?
Yeah, definitely. I was lucky, like Jordan and Grant. I had, as a child, I was an amazing life. And seeing people here that have had nothing and come from nothing and still have nothing here and leave as a changed person, totally changed, totally in their skin, they're kind of feeling what we felt back then. What we had, our feelings of being happy and all those memories we had, and they've never actually had them, but they leave with them.
Yeah, and so I think that's really important. So it's like, even there's like, even if, you know, we didn't have that taste before, the fact that we can have it, once we've sort of tasted that something better, it all becomes easier. Because I think even if we did have a sort of crap childhood, we can sort of still sort of get the idea there has to be something better. And that's, I think that's what rehab really is. I think that's what the motivation comes from, is this idea there has to be something better. And even if we've never had a taste of that something better, you know, we can still believe it's there. And I would say, and even as those of us who did have a reasonably good childhood, what's available, it can be much far superior to that. It can be even, you know, so even we are taking a leap of faith. Because if that childhood stuff had been so great, how did we end up with such a mess in the first place? So there was obviously something missing. And the idea here is that we talk about compassion. The thing that we're missing was compassion as kids. We didn't have this ability to deal with the bad stuff. And that's something we had to develop. So that's why the good stuff later on can be even better, because we now have this ability to actually really fully engage with life. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
very good sense.
So just to finish off, what would you suggest then for people to get motivated to quit? Like, so say you were talking to somebody that was in your position that was still caught in addiction. What can they do to get motivated to come here or to just quit, to do something? What could make them motivated to do that?
With me, it was the fitness. Definitely me and the fitness. I went, started going back to the gym before I left.
Oh, before you were at home?
Yeah, and I went twice before I came, when I hadn't been 6 months before. And I'm like, had this great feeling back again. And then, and all that, I think, I'm not too sure how to answer that.
But that's a good answer. I mean, you started to sort of get the ball rolling. And I think that's huge, because sometimes just getting the ball rolling, even if it's only a little tiny thing, it gives the momentum to actually do something much bigger. Because it probably did that for you. Like, had you decided before you started doing the fitness to go back, come to rehab? Or?
I decided to go to rehab, and I was doing the fitness leading up to coming.
But it built your motivation, didn't
it? Yeah, because then I came here with a good mindset. And like lots of studies back in Melbourne where I'm from, my auntie told me that a strong mind, a strong body is a strong mind.
Yeah.
So it works hand in hand. And the biggest part of, a big part of the programs back home that you're using is a lot of fitness. So, yeah, I can say your fitness. Sense. Yeah, that's a good way of answering it.
Yeah,
fitness is a good way of getting into things and motivating and reaching goals. And just little tiny goals. Start small. Just like, don't use for an hour. And then maybe when you're using every 20 minutes, don't use for an hour. And you've already set the goal.
So it's building up your self-esteem and stuff as well. So you feel more able to do it. Yeah, it's really good.
I suppose I see it as you don't need to live in that cage you've created for yourself in addiction. The self-hatred, the, you know, why do I keep repeating these behaviours? Why am I locked in this struggle? you realise life doesn't actually have to be a struggle. It can be enjoyable, and that's the most important thing I think you get out of rehab or just breaking your addiction if you do it through AA or NA, is just that freedom that it doesn't need to be a struggle.
Yeah, for me it was much like Matthew. I set myself a goal of trying to achieve something I've never done before, and I knew I needed to give life a shake and do something that I'd never think I could do. So I ended up doing an ultra marathon, which was a really big turning point in my recovery because I proved to myself that I could do anything. But it also helped with me being in pain. I'd suffered for so long. And it was enough for me to actually give my life a shake and say, all right, well, if I can do this, I can do anything. And I came into Hope with the mindset of, you know, I'd be open mind to mindfulness and compassion and stuff like that. And having that fitness experience before has really helped with mindfulness because I've experienced that pain and I've experienced running for 17 hours and my legs burning and all this sort of stuff. So it was really good for me to come here and relate that to mindfulness. And in a way, it sort of gave me a bit of a kick start because I knew that I just had to relate the pain to my emotional.
That's really what it is. It's sort of developing that same open attitude towards emotional pain as we have towards, are you happy towards physical pain? So that's it for this week. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks from Paul,
Grant,
Jordan,
Matthew.